I also have found that the way God speaks to me often is not just through scriptures, but it's actually through humans and through nature and through circumstances. I don't think many humans hear a literal voice. It's rare, but I think many people can see the voice of God.
On In Good Faith, we believe that all faith traditions have something to teach us about how God is working in the world and in our lives. So join us as we listen and learn. Have you ever lived somewhere outside of your home country for long enough that you started to sort of feel at home? Well, I have a cousin who moved to Switzerland in his mid-20s for work. After about 5 years there, I went to visit him, and he said, if you live somewhere for 3 years, you can never quite feel at home anywhere because either you still miss home, or if you are home, now you miss that other place and all the good things about it. The question is, are you never at home anywhere now, or do you somehow learn to be at home everywhere or anywhere? Our guest today is Dave Gibbons, who shares an interesting concept he calls third culture, which might help answer my cousin's question, and he even shares why he thinks Jesus is the ultimate third culture person. Dave Gibbons is the founder and lead pastor of New Song Church in Santa Ana, California. He's recently published The Shape of My Eyes, a memoir on race, faith, and finding myself from Worthy Books. Dave has served on the board of World Vision and Fuller Seminary.
Yeah, I felt as a young person, I never fit in. My dad was American. Culturally, my mom was Korean. And so whether I was in America or later into Korea, I never felt at home. I always felt like an outsider. So I found out, as I did research on this, that this is called third culture, that diplomats' kids and missionary kids would go to other countries and never would feel at home where their parents were working in this other country. And then when they went back to the country of origins, they also didn't feel at home. So they call them third culture kids. So kids that always felt like misfits culturally. And I started thinking about this. I go, oh, wait a second. This is like another large segment of the population that's going to grow in the world. So I wrote about this like 30 years ago. Because when I started seeing the initial studies on it, because someone started writing on it, but then I started expanding it. And I started thinking, oh, third culture, and this is my definition, is the mindset and will to love, learn, and serve in any culture, even in the midst of pain and discomfort. Mm. I would say it's in two words, it's painful adaptation. And if it's one word, I would say third culture is adaptation. And for companies, I tell leadership, I started saying this 20 years ago. I said, this is actually the type of leader you want for your company. You want a third culture leader. And when I thought about it theologically, I said, oh, this is God himself, because Jesus was both like heaven and earth. Uh-huh. He was divine yet fully human. And I said, these are the great leaders who are very transcendent. They can be very abstract and seems ethereal. They're like in another world, yet they're so human and you can connect to them. So these are third culture leaders.
I truly never thought of Jesus that way, as being the person who had a foot in two different worlds and might not fit completely into either. Although what you say about his transcendence makes me feel that he became a person or deity who belongs anywhere. In my experience, some of the best leaders who have seemed at home with all different kinds of people were people who had gone through difficult things that taught them compassion and maybe helped them transcend this idea of just one home. I'm curious, because it sounds like you've lived in the U.S., you've also spent time living in Korea. So even if you go to congregations of the very same faith, how do they sit? Do they sit differently in the culture? Do they feel different? Or do you feel like, yes, this is a spiritual home I recognize? Or does it feel different in a different place and language?
As a third culture person?
Yeah.
It always feels different and it feels home. Because I think once you embrace like who you are, you're not trying to compare yourself as much. It's like you have a spirit of curiosity and excitement. It's like being at Disneyland for some, right? It's like, it's like from, you know, C.S. Lewis, The Chronicles of Narnia. It's you're going through this wardrobe. And then if you take that step into the new wardrobe that you think is different, suddenly you're awakened to this whole new world. So it's not like, oh man, I don't feel like I fit here. It's like, I can't believe that I'm here. So it's a totally different energy. So it's like what they also say with regard to anxiety or stress. I was told that an Olympic athlete was asked before she was going to go do her main event by the reporter. She was asked, are you like anxious about this moment? This is incredible. You worked all your life for this. The athlete said, oh, actually, I'm really excited about this. So the same energy that would be one that would cause all this anxiety can be shifted into opportunity and positive energy. So that's how I feel. Like as a third culture person, those who are third culture, once they learn to embrace identity, they're totally able to adapt and be fully awakened in this new context. And yes, it's different, but there's also some things that are the same. It's both and that's third culture. It's an and, not either or.
I kind of relate a little bit as someone who used to sing and dance a lot in public. This was past years, but people would ask me before you're performing and I said, oh yeah, I always have butterflies. I think that's just part of the process. And they said it helped them when they, instead of saying, oh, I am so anxious, I'm so scared, that they thought, maybe I'm mislabeling. And just what you just said, maybe I'm just really excited about this. And if I choose that as my mindset, it might be a whole different experience.
No doubt about it. I mean, studies have shown this, and even like personally with the athletes I work with that are high-performance athletes, they have the same type of curiosity and excitement about the moment. They're not shying away from it. They're living in that moment. They dream of the moment. And so it's just a totally different mindset, a rewriting of that script.
I wonder if I could just ask about New Song. You have, you call it a third culture community. I wonder first if you can talk about that. You have, with New Song and with its, I'm guessing, it, with its founding or later, something that you called a manifesto. And I wonder if you could talk about that just a little bit. That was interesting to me.
Yeah, I was reading movements about 10 or 15 years ago about movements and stuff. I go, oh, they have like these manifestos.
Like a mission statement?
It's like things they value, things they believe, their declarations of who they want to become or who they see themselves as, whether it's now or in the future. And so I thought about how, not only me, but I thought about my children. I thought, what would I want them to feel like? What would I want them to aspire to or be inspired by? And so I just started making these declarations like, and started writing them down over and over again to the point that I whittled it down to, I think it'd be something like this set of things that I would want my family and those that are my friends all to experience, like freedom, joy, the idea of being able to roam the earth without any hindrance, of having all the resources in the world, a sense of abundance and not scarcity. So I just started thinking about all these beautiful things that maybe if we were to come together, we could come together based upon these hopes, these declarations, these values.
As you look back, because you include faith as one of the elements in this, how did faith help you through some of that trauma? Was that a helpful thing?
It was probably the only thing for a while because there was moments where I felt connected to God. And in that connection, I felt like he saw me and he understood me and that he gave answers to me that I don't feel anybody could give to me. And so I had these little moments where I felt literally like he was talking to me. And it sounds weird to some maybe, but you know, I don't think I heard clearly an audible voice, but there was clear, distinct languaging to me. I think there's so much that gets spoken like with pictures. There's words can't describe it, but he's speaking to you. And so I felt his presence. I felt him speaking to me. And I think in those moments, I felt like I knew he was with me and I knew that he was going to be with me in the future. And so I didn't have to fear.
That's very beautiful. When you work with people who've experienced trauma, I mean, they may have a religious background, spiritual background, or not. For those who do believe in God or some higher power, the question often with a traumatic experiences would be, how did God let this happen? And then this interesting experience you've talked about of saying, and yet I knew he was with me. That seems like a paradox of a believer's life, that we can believe in an all-powerful God, and yet part of the way things are set up is that we will experience different things. Could you comment on that when you work with people or for yourself?
I think the why question is a normal one. It's hard for us to understand. And I don't know if I still understand completely why certain traumas, certain events happen in any of our lives. So I don't try to argue that piece. I think from an Eastern perspective, suffering is normative. It's a part of our life. It's embraced. And so in the Western world, we're just trying to get out of it all the time somehow. So I think I've taken a different perspective where suffering's normal. How do I exist in it? So instead of the why questions, like, why not me? Because it happens to everybody. And then the next part of this then is, what may be its purpose? Because it seems if there is a higher power, it wouldn't just be random that he may permit suffering or things to happen. And so potentially there is maybe a purpose in it. I had this really unique moment, Steve, where I felt I saw the continuum of pain, where I saw how the first stage usually is like shock when some pain comes or trauma. The second stage is, oh man, I wish this was over. I can't believe it's happening. So there's this disorientation. You're wanting to get it over with. And then somehow it doesn't go away. So you endure it because pain tends to be longer than you want it to be and much more costly. And so you have to learn to endure. And that's what you hear people always say. You have to be purposeful and persevering, but that still didn't satisfy. And then there's this moment where there's suffering that wasn't going away in my life. And I said, if it's not going away, then why is it still here? And then I said, oh, maybe it's joy. Maybe that's the gift in the midst of suffering. Can I have joy no matter what the circumstance? Because there was this unique passage I was reading in the sacred literature, or some call the Bible, and I was reading this text, and it said about Jesus, who for the joy set before him, he endured the suffering and the shame. And I said, wow, there was a gift in the suffering. It was joy that helped him carry it through it. And I said, that is beautiful. So I said, God, okay, so no matter what's happened around me, can I have that as a gift? Whatever's talked about here. And so that's what I started living out, is saying, I'm going to pursue that gift of joy no matter what my circumstances.
I don't know if I would have understood that 20 years ago, but I think I do now. I remember arriving at the hospital after my mother had had a stroke and she couldn't speak. But we knew she was conscious of us. She wanted to communicate with us, but we didn't know yet how much of her abilities would come back or even if she would live. So it was a pretty scary situation, not something I would define as joy. But as I watched my siblings arrive one by one and gather around her, and then my adult daughter even slipped into the room and just quietly put her arm around me, I think I experienced joy in the midst of a terrifying situation. There was so much love, so much consciousness of what my mother had built with her family over the years. So it was a joyful moment in the midst of sorrow. Do you find that if you help someone understand that people are able to make that journey better if they realize God can actually turn something bad into something good? If you show them that, is that helpful to people to accept the reality and kind of move through to joy?
I don't know if it's helpful for some. I think it depends upon who the individual is, because if you're in the middle of a crisis or trauma, no matter what you say, usually doesn't matter. And so it's just about being with them and it's just being present. It's an art. You have to read the person, the situation. But I do think when they're ready to receive data or receive wisdom, they can see historically there's a pattern to pain. And there's this continuum of pain. I drew out this illustration where commonly people cover up their pain. That's the first step. We anesthetize it. The second stage is like bringing it above ground where you talk about it. And 12 steps does that. My name's Dave. I'm a recovering Pharisee. Whatever it is, right? And then, but there's this vulnerability, confession. The third stage to me is from confession to embrace of your pain, where you own it. It's not leaving you. It's like a scar. That's a healthy place where you're not denying it. You're embracing this dark side of you or this hard side of you. But then I show people there's an evolution of it. If you study throughout history, it seems like eventually with leaders and with people, it becomes a guide for a lot of people. Pain can become a guide. It helps lead you to your destiny because you develop these antennas and the sensitivity to other people's pain. The same pain that affected you, you now see in others. And so it helps you to be this person who becomes generous. And we know that generosity to others brings back generosity to you. And so there's this beautiful thing that occurs as you take pain and see its evolution from covering it up to confession, to embrace, but then it becomes a guide towards your destiny and how you can serve and care for people, maybe become a calling. And then the last stage of it to me is where it becomes a gift. I tell people there's probably a sensibility with a lot of leaders where they want to make a difference with their life. And so I said, you're the one that prayed it, right? To the universe, to God, whoever, you said, man, I want to make a difference with my life. I said, it's like if God's up there, wherever he is, he's going, oh no, you prayed that prayer. It's like, you know, because if you're going to make a difference with your life, you have to get humbled usually, you know, and every leader goes through some humiliation, it seems, or some major suffering.
Tired of feeling overwhelmed by conflict in your life? Learn the skills to confidently handle any challenge on BYU Radio's new original podcast, Conflict Coach. Certified mediator Dr. Emily Taylor coaches real people through real conflicts, from family struggles to workplace disputes, neighborhood tensions to in-law disagreements. Each episode of Conflict Coach with Dr. Emily Taylor provides practical strategies to uncover the root of a conflict, find solutions, and create positive change. As a married mom of five, Dr. Taylor's confidence in navigating conflict comes not only from her professional training, but also real-life experience. She holds a PhD in psychology, is a certified mediator, and has authored two books on effective conflict resolution strategies. Conflict is inevitable, but conflicts don't have to ruin your life. Let Dr. Emily Taylor be your guide to building better relationships, strengthening your communication skills, and turning conflict to growth. Tune in to Conflict Coach on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is In Good Faith. I'm speaking with Dave Gibbons of New Song in Santa Ana, California. He spoke to us about how, as he's matured, he's found new definitions for spirituality.
Yeah, I don't like to say I'm religious anymore. I'm more spiritual. And spiritual me being about meaning, purpose, significance, and transcendence. And what I found out about God, because I was really curious about him because it provoked me as a young person. But when I was seeking answers, I went to seminary, grad school to study theologically different religions and philosophies. And I saw Jesus totally different. That's why I believe all religions respect and honor him, at least as a great man or a prophet or a son of God, because he was a man of grace, forgiveness, gentleness, humility, quite different than how maybe the world defines greatness.
I wonder if I could ask, what prompted you to start writing your memoir?
I had started this other book and was excited to present that to the publishers. In the midst of it, I've had this epiphany. I go, why don't I just write about my life? Because as you get older, you start reflecting a lot more. And I found myself not so focused on the future or the past, but being much more present now as an older man. And I think the catalyst was an encounter with a brain doctor, and he had done a scan of my brain. And then when he showed it on the screen in his office, he said, do you see those four pink dots? And it's like a diamond-shaped dots. And I go, yeah. And he goes, Dave, that's what we call classically PTSD.
Wow.
And I started thinking, I don't know if I ever had trauma. I never defined it as such, because I thought of Vietnam veterans or people involved in the Iraqi War, but I never thought of someone like me. But then I look back at my life, I said, oh, you know, I think my mom's dad's divorce and then my mom's death from a hit and run accident when I was in college. Those were traumatic for me. And then even potentially my mom's stories that I didn't even know about. I was thinking there's so many stories I don't know. So maybe there's something epigenetically where they say, just like there could be physical characteristics passed on through the genes, so can maybe traumas. So I said, I think I should explore this and not just gloss over it.
So you sit yourself down, you start writing about your life, and especially I'm thinking someone investigating something they might consider as traumatic, even as you say, after the fact. Do you feel like you learned a lot? How did you feel inside putting things down on paper like that? For some people that would be visiting maybe unpleasantness they wouldn't want to put down.
Well, exposed a couple of things. I think once exposed my own compulsions where I was taught to be a visionary leader and I was called a futurist. And so I think I took pride in the fact that I could forecast things. So whether I was investing or whether I was looking at movements or cultural shifts, I felt like I was good at that. So I think I had such a focus on that that I never was present. And so what emerged from this was this becoming present more with people, which is sad because I've been involved with the people business all the time. And I think people say I'm a good listener, but I don't think I was fully there. I was always thinking about the next. It forced me to see some of the ways I wasn't present, because when you're writing a memoir, you have to get into the skin of everybody. You're thinking about what they look like, what their facial expressions are, how they talk. So it forced you to sit and circle things. And I never circled things. I was on a linear path of just moving on towards a destination. And so it was a beautiful awakening for me to be much more of a person of marination, where I'm sitting in a space, absorbing, awakened to what's going on in a room. And then secondly, I think, Stephen, it was about the healing that I think I needed. Because I glossed over things and was future-oriented, I never really understood the nuances of the pain and how it maybe affected me, my parents, or my family, or others. And so I think it helped me to get healed as I started thinking about some of these wounds I never really addressed.
I've heard people say before, God won't give you anything that you can't handle, and have had cause in the decades of life to say, oh, really?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not sure about that.
That's true.
And then I have heard people say that you'll get things you can't handle, but nothing that you can't handle with God with you. And have you had those experiences where you thought, I don't know how I got through this, but I think God was with me?
So many times. And then I would add, there's times I didn't think God was with me.
Oh, didn't think so.
Yeah. There's moments where I said, God, where are you? Or God, I don't feel you right now.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's harmful to even admit, because when I read the Psalms where David, he writes very vulnerably about, God, I don't feel you here. But then what's interesting about the Psalms, he always has like a vow of trust at the end somehow, where he lifts it back to the place that he knows is true, but maybe he doesn't feel it's true right now. But that helped me process to say, you know, I need to admit that right now I don't feel God, because I feel so struck by this trauma or by this tragedy or betrayal or hurt. I just feel numb. So I think that's important, because I think sometimes we gloss over people's real suffering, and some people never get out of their suffering, and to act like they can just whisk it away is so unrealistic.
I'm wondering if the times we don't feel God, is that the actual moment for faith? Because that seems like that's more of a leap we have to decide to take than if we think, yes, I sense God is with me, I'm moving ahead. That seems to be faith too, but I think of Mother Teresa and feeling like God has disappeared from her life, and yet she did not stop doing the very works she had felt called to do earlier.
That's such a good point. I think you're right, Steve. There's these moments where you just know it's true, but you don't feel it at all. The faith is saying, okay, I'm gonna make this movement. I'm gonna take this step, even though I don't quite feel it. And I think that's maturity too. As you get older, you realize that's the differentiator maybe between sometimes being a child and being an adult, is that you just do what's right or what you believe is right no matter what. A mother doesn't have a choice sometimes. At 3 a.m, their kid's crying that needs milk. And so as a parent, you just say, okay, I got to get up. I think that's what it is sometimes. I don't feel it. I don't want to do it. But I learn from people that are better than me maybe, or smarter than me. This is what they did. So I'll take this step by faith.
How do you sense God working in your life now? And is it the same or different than at an earlier part of your journey?
Yeah, it's much more freeing right now to me. I think early on, I had a lot of chaos in my life. So when people had all the answers early, these strict rules and regulations, it was good for me, I think. It was secure. It felt like at least they felt like they had all the answers. So it felt good. But as you get older and you run into these traumas and conflicts and crises, betrayals and hurts, you go, wow. Oh, by the way, by those same people sometimes. You start to question things. And so I think as I grew older, I went through the wilderness experience with my relationship with God. And then I think it evolved where the beautiful thing that's happened now is, instead of just like having to read the Bible, which is important to me as a follower of Jesus, I also have found that the way God speaks to me often is not just through scriptures, but it's actually through humans and through nature and through circumstances. My next book I want to write, I want to call Seeing the Voice of God. And that's much more helpful for me than hearing the voice, because I don't think many humans hear a literal voice. Mm-hmm. It's rare, but I think many people can see the voice of God. And you see it usually through humans, if you're really looking, or you see it through nature, or you see the stars. Just the beauty of it all. There's too much beauty here that can't just be randomly created. There must be an ultimate designer of this. And it compels you to get closer to this supernatural being. If they're really there, you start to seek it. So I found that has transformed my relationship with God, is where I'm not just trying to read a text from a study an hour a day, but I'm able then to interact with all my world as I'm going to the grocery store, or I'm talking to the clerk, or I'm talking to a client. That moment is a spiritual moment.
I'm wondering if, because you work with so many clients, and it may in some cases have been a spiritual-based organization, other times it might have been purely business or quote-unquote, mm-hmm. You just talked about seeing the voice of God, seeing God in other people, which sounds very Matthew 25 to me. When did we see you, Lord? And yeah. That when you help these people or those people, do you feel like you've learned to love people or to see God in the clients, whether it was a spiritual discussion or not?
Absolutely. If you really start believing that God's speaking to you through potentially human, there's a different level of respect and honor and wonder versus like judgment, comparison, and trying to manipulate them into some way through your engagement. You're a student, you're in awe. And so I think it's transformed every interaction for me, from a child or to someone of a different religion, different faith. I respect and honor them all as just humans. And I have something to learn. And there's a beauty to them and the way they even seek their power, their supernatural power. And so I think I've become much more open to how people pursue their relationship with God and where God's taking them. And so I encourage people, things may seem totally chaotic right now. Just realize, as you're seeing all the darkness, all these voids, all these things are confusing, that it's the moment right before creation. So don't lose your head. Things are being made new. So this is your moment to shine. This is your moment to create. You're not ignoring the pain. It's there. But focus upon having faith and trusting that this next step is about you creating the new you.
Many thanks to Dave Gibbons for speaking with me. Did you know we've started a newsletter? We'll update you on behind-the-scenes extras and events. It's a great way to connect with me and the show. Sign up at ingoodfaithpodcast.org. This episode was produced by James Sturtevant. Our production team also includes Aaliyah Ebert, Katarina Martinic, and Heather Bigley. Our post-production sound designers are Mark Hansen, Ashton Parkinson, and DJ Cromarty. Find us on Instagram and Facebook at In Good Faith Podcast. In Good Faith is a production of BYU Radio. I'm Stephen Cap Perry. I hope you join me again soon, right here, In Good Faith.